Funny Books with Aaron, Holly and Andrew, without Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And I'm Andrew.
Did you just like, you're like so used to saying Wayne? Wayne is more reliable than any of us.
That is correct. That is correct. I always have to, you know, as I'm doing the intro, I'm always doing a head count. Who's here?
Right.
What's that guy's name? You know,
as if we haven't been talking for 20 minutes before.
Exactly.
Aaron is the guy who at the fast food joint, he waits in line for 20 minutes, gets up to the counter, and then he looks at the menu to think of.
I'm gonna need just a moment.
Well, hey guys, it's been a few weeks.
I'm looking at the chat, which, you know, holds our historical, sort of activity here, and it's been a month.
It's been a month.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. Wow. And I mean, you've heard the internet clamoring for a fresh episode. So
friends. Our socials have been relentless.
Yeah.
But to you, dear listener, it hasn't been a month because we released an episode right before Thanksgiving. So it's been a month since we recorded, but our Pop Culture in Review podcast is what we talked about last time. And that was good. I'm looking at the picture. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's some good stuff on there. Good conversation.
Yeah, it's a good chat. It's a good chat.
Aaron found a way to bring the pit into the conversation in a geek podcast.
I do what I can. But speaking of pop culture, Paul. Are you caught up on Landman?
I am. Yes. Because of this recording, the new episode has not come out yet. It's tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm all caught up on Landman. I haven't watched last week's episode yet. I think I've got
last week's episode is so good, Aaron. Yeah. You know, I find that the acting in this year's and this season's Landman is just. Uh-huh. I mean, it's Emmy. It's if they don't win an Emmy for some Billy Bob Thornton specifically, but everyone's like firing on all cylinders this season. They've got Sam Elliott in there, but I mean Billy Bob he's selling it. He's really so good, and this latest episode is just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and Sam Shepard is that
Sam Elliott?
Sam Elliott. Thank you. I love him, and I mean you just put the camera on him and no dialogue. I'm good. I mean I love Sam Elliott.
Is this a Taylor Sheridan product?
It is.
It is. It's his only good one right now.
That is correct.
I know you guys love Tyler. I know you love Sheridan stuff, but I can't get into it. I tried Yellowstone. I tried the 1892.
I would say this is very different than anything. I would say this is probably the best thing he's done since like the first two seasons of Yellowstone.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I did really enjoy 1923.
I did not. I enjoyed the first season of 1923. The second season was so brutal for me.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this about Landman. Is there anyone good? Are any of the characters good people that you would want to root for?
I would say for the most part, they are. I think that's the difference. And this is, it's like, these are, I mean, I wouldn't say they're the best people on the planet. They're all, but they're not like murderers.
Well, and they're not despicable. In fact, I would say that Billy Bob's son is a wholly decent person, right? Yeah. I mean, of all of them. But even Billy Bob plays a decent guy. He's just, a little morally compromised in some areas. But, I think he's trying to be a good guy. I don't think there's anybody truly reprehensible in this one versus, when I was watching Yellowstone, you're like, there is nobody here that is a good person, on the whole.
But I eventually turned around on that about midway through first season. And don't get me wrong. No, they're still all bad people, but I appreciated the love they had for each other as a family.
Sure.
And the ranch. And so that's where I latched on to. But I would say Landman is genuinely, it's excellent. I'm looking at Taylor Sheridan's TV pedigree since Yellowstone, right? Mayor of Kingstown, I really, it started strong, got weak for me. Tulsa King, I have not even started the latest season.
Same. Second season broke me on Tulsa King.
Same.
Yeah.
Lioness is excellent, especially if you're a Sicario.
I do want to see Lioness. That's one on my list to see, watch.
Yeah. And I have not watched the second season of Lioness yet.
I would say the second season is just as good as the first.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, but no, Landman, I genuinely enjoy Landman and highly recommend it.
I would say the writing and the acting is really consistent on the show. Mm-hmm. Though I do have a complaint, and I've shared this before. It's that you can tell when Taylor Sheridan is speaking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it drives me crazy where he, you know, where a character, usually Billy Bob in Landman, pops off with, you know, a soliloquy on you know, the state of affairs. And you're like, okay, shut up, Taylor Sheridan. Let the character talk.
Right.
You know, that annoys, the preaching annoys me. But other than that, I really enjoy the show.
You know, well, I had an issue. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I finished up season 3 of The Diplomat, and it was
great show.
It was great. We burned through it in about a week. It is, season 3 is just as good as season 2.
Yeah, we went through it pretty fast, too. Have you watched The Beast in Me yet?
No, I've not.
That's with Claire Danes and Matt, can't remember his last name. He's married to Carrie Russell.
Okay.
But he was in Perry Mason and and The Americans with Carrie Russell as well. About.
Yeah.
Anyway, The Beast in Me is fantastic. It's a limited series, like 6-7 episodes. It's really good.
General premise?
Yeah. She is a nonfiction writer, and whose young son was killed in a car accident, you know, several years back. She's been grieving ever since and unable to write. And the guy who moves in next door to her is an accused murderer. And so they strike up an unlikely friendship. And he asks her to write his story. And hijinks ensue. And Matt, whatever the hell his name, Matthew Reese, he is one scary honky mofo in that show. I mean, there is a scene where I went, oh my God. I mean, he is just a truly, truly frightening persona. I really enjoyed the show.
Is this Netflix as well?
It is.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. Yeah. Sounds like Highly something recommend. Reagan and I would like to watch together.
Yeah. Suzanne loved it.
Perfect.
I had to prioritize my recent television because I wanted to make sure I finished Stranger Things, those first 4 episodes. And I want to make sure I'm caught up on Welcome to Derry. I'm all caught up on Welcome to Derry. There's only one episode left of that. So I'll have some extra time to take on something new. I mean, you know, truly Landman is one of my favorite shows right now. So I'm enjoying that. But
when you say get caught up on the first 4 episodes of Stranger Things, is that the first 4 of this current season?
Correct. Okay. This current season. Cause they released 4 episodes, I think, on Thanksgiving. They're releasing 3 episodes on Christmas and then the final episode on New Year's Eve.
Reagan and I had just started episode 4 when it was time to go to bed last night. So we've gotten through the first 3.
Is it worth the watch? Because I'm reluctant to jump back in.
I do. I
mean,
I
did you finish better, the last season?
I did.
Okay.
I think it's better than season 4 so far. Obviously, just a little over 3 episodes in. But so far, I like it better. I feel like it's getting back more to its roots a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually have a different opinion, but that's okay. I actually find season 4... It is, in my mind, the first 3, the first episode is good, the second 2 episodes are filler, and it's all about the 4th episode. Okay. Like, I feel like episodes 2 and 3 probably could have been combined into 1. It feels like not much really happens, but if you took the 2 episodes and combined them, and cut out the filler, you'd be fine. But it is all about episode 4, and episode 4 is excellent.
Okay.
And it sets up some real good stuff for us going into the back half of the season. So, yeah, I mean, Aaron, I think it's worth continuing with. I mean, it is still, you know, just extremely well produced. Some of the actors have gotten into their acting skins. Some of them clearly will never get into their acting skins. like, I don't know that Millie Bobby Brown is cut off for acting after this show is over. but some of them are good, and you know, for some reason Dustin looks like a 37-year-old man in this season.
That's funny.
But I love, you know,
Dustin's mullet. I mean, Dustin's mullet has really come into its own.
It is, but like I was looking at him in that first episode, I'm like, he kind of looks like a 37-year-old man in this episode. And I think it's just because they take the makeup on him to cover his acne.
Yeah.
And he looks genuinely like an adult man in this season. But anyway, those are besides the point. It's still a good show.
David Harbour's still amazing.
Yeah, he's still good.
So, Paul, you're not a Millie Bobby Brown fan?
No, I am not.
Okay.
And especially in this season, I find her acting to be particularly bad.
It hasn't been great.
Like, I thought, you know, like, she was kind of, you know, at first it was like, okay, she stunted, you know, in her speech and her social skills because of the way she was raised and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know, this season, she's just, it feels like she's phoning it in. It feels like she's taken a step back from where she had gotten. But, you know, I you know, kind of staying on the topic of actors, I talked in our pop culture podcast how I really enjoy Welcome to Derry. And it's kind of put me on a little bit of a Stephen King binge.
Right.
So this weekend I'm doing a little bit of a Stephen King marathon. And it started with last night. Last night I had a double feature. I'm going to tell you about the second movie before I go back to the first movie. Because the second movie I watched was the recent remake of Salem's Lot.
They did
one last year on HBO Max. It stars Lewis Pullman, you know, Bill Pullman's son.
Yeah.
It's not bad. You know, it's fine. You know, I would say it's not as good as either prior iteation of Salem's Lot, but I've watched both of those recently.
Like in the last year, I've watched both of those.
I think the difference is those had 4 hours to do their story. This was like an hour and 50 minutes, including credits. So it very much feels like it plows through the story without really much, you know, explanation or character, you know, growth or anything like that. But it's enjoyable. It's perfectly fine throwaway entertainment. You're not gonna regret watching it like I did with the first movie, which I knew I would. I knew I would regret watching this movie because I remember it being bad the first time I saw it, but I wanted to revisit it. Dreamcatcher.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Nope, never seen it.
So Dreamcatcher came out in 2003 and has such a high pedigree. It is directed by Larry Kasdan and stars Thomas Jane, Morgan Freeman, Donnie Wahlberg, Damian Lewis, Jason Lee, Timothy Oliphant, and Tom Sizemore.
That's a hell of a cast.
In 2003 was even more of a hell of a cast.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to watch it is because it does have, at least in the novel, ties to It. Like, it takes place in Derry. There's mentions of Pennywise and the larger, you know, structure of this whole, you know, It multi-universe storyline thing. And I, you know, I was like, okay, let me rewatch Dreamcatcher just to see if I can appreciate it on those merits. And I remember why I hated Dreamcatcher when I watched it last night. Because despite its cast, the first half hour of the film is actually pretty good. But, you know, there's like something happens, you know, after about the first half hour, 45 minutes, that, you know, turns the film into kind of a different movie. And it's just so, so terrible. After that, I was like, whoa. Like, I was like, do I even want to finish this? But I was like, no, I'm committed. Don't give up halfway through the first movie of your Stephen King marathon.
How many more of these movies do you have?
So I think today I want to watch, or this weekend, I want to watch It Chapters 1 and 2. There's one more I wanted to watch. Like, I think there was only, you know, three more that I really was like, okay, these are ones. Oh, so I have an interest in watching, funny enough, I have an interest in watching the new Dark Tower movie.
Really?
I never actually saw it. The one with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey?
I have never read The Dark Tower.
I've read The Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have no interest in seeing the most recent movie. If it's good, let me know, Paul.
Yeah, but the three that are definite are It Chapter 1 and 2 and The Mist.
Would you consider a little side of Dean Koontz? You could watch Phantoms.
I do love Dean Koontz and Ben Affleck's the bomb in Phantoms.
He is the bomb in Phantoms.
I think you're missing probably the most important Stephen King film, which is Dead Zone.
I mean, Dead Zone is excellent, but that I feel like that's a different Stephen King marathon. I feel like if I want to go 80s Stephen King, that's prime. That's like Firestarter, Silver Bullet, Dead Zone,
the original.
Like, the original It. Like, I feel like that's a different marathon. I've kind of been focused on the more recent ones, especially some of the ones I haven't seen.
But yeah, I will tell you, you're not Amazon looking Prime. Not looking for a full retrospective. You're more like more of the last 20 years of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuff you haven't watched because the original stuff was so good.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, Amazon kind of threw me for a loop, Prime Video, because they released Good Boy.
I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
I don't know, but I really want to see it.
Same.
So, and it's only an hour and 13 minutes, so I might try to fit that one in at the end because it's a short one. And if you're not familiar with Good Boy, Andrew, it's a haunted house movie set from the point of view of a dog, of the dog.
Is this based on Stephen King or
no, it's not. Like that's what I'm saying. Like, they threw me for a loop because I really want to see the movie, and now it's included with Prime Video.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So I have to give it a shot.
Anything from told from the point of a dog is something I'm probably interested in.
Well, and I love in the promotional campaign for the film, you know, they're like, don't worry, the dog survives. Because people are like, I'm not watching a movie where the dog dies. You know,
I can tell Reagan this is just a movie about a dog because she doesn't usually watch horror films.
Uh-huh.
So I just tell her it's a movie about a dog, you know, told from playing a dog, not tell her it's a horror film, and just kind of trick her into watching it. at least until something bad starts happening. She says, you know, she walks away from it.
Yeah.
Well, and so pretty much everyone has been singing the praises of this movie too. Like, not only the dog's acting, but genuinely that it's a good, creepy movie. So.
All right. No,
maybe that's how I'll wrap up my night because it's so short.
Yeah.
That's a great.
I think I may watch that tonight.
So anyway, we got off on a complete tangent. Nothing from literally nothing from our outline is what we've been talking about. So far. You know, you could tell it's been a month, but you know, in that month, we've had some movie news. We've had some comic book news, you know, and this week there were some pretty big crossover announcements, you know, out of Marvel and DC just Marvel and DC. The first one is the biggest and it's also the most frustrating, which is that Marvel and DC will be doing a Superman Spider-Man crossover again, you know, celebrating the anniversary of the original. And in the first one, which I think is Superman Spider-Man, which comes from DC Comics, is written by Mark Waid and drawn by Jorge Jimenez, includes backup features, you know, stuff like that. But what's frustrating to me is that Deadpool Batman and Batman Deadpool, apparently there are two books, I thought there was only one, have still not been released digitally, still only available, you know, physically. And they're probably going to do that as well with this new one. And that frustrates the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Same. Like, it's at this point, it's been over a month. Like, I understand, you know, wanting to support comic shops, maybe give them a week or two. But like, at this point, it's been quite a while. Well, and apparently it may not be released digitally except through Marvel Unlimited and DC's.
Well, you know, or in trade, you know, when they do the collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find this amusing, but I do agree with you. A month is plenty long to give the physical time to breathe. They should definitely have it out on digital by now, but I didn't realize they were only doing that first one physically, or I just picked it up to support it. But knowing that I'll probably pick up Superman, Spider-Man, if they do the same thing with that,
I will probably, because I'm so excited for that one, I will probably just break my.
Your rule.
Break my rule and go to the freaking comic shop.
I'd like to point out that. Over all these years, Paul broke first. I have still not gone back to Comixology.
This is. I feel like you should. I feel like. Well, now there's this new one, right? That's coming up as soon as they have an app, Andrew. As soon as they have an app, you can go to what is it? Neon Ichiban,
something like that. Yeah.
But anyway, so that's one crossover.
Comixology is coming out with a new app.
No, it's not Comixology. Well, let me clarify. It is the people who previously owned Comixology. They have a new company called Neon Ichiban, and it's available now. Like, you can literally buy and read comics through them now, but they do not have an Apple app yet. Okay. So, excuse me. So, you know, but you can read them online basically currently. I should see if they have Batman Deadpool.
Once they have an app, I think I'm there.
Yeah, I doubt they will. I don't think they've released that stuff to digital at all, regardless of app.
Platform.
Oh, you mean Batman? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's hyphenated Neon Ichiban, or is it
no, two it's two words. Well, I mean, if you're going through you know, it's neonichiban.com is if you're looking for the website.
Man, yeah. If you see they drop an Apple app, shoot me a message because I would love to get back to digital comics that are non-comicsology.
Yeah, I hear you. I will let you know.
All right,
but,
thanks,
you know, the other big crossover that was announced this week was Planet of the Apes and Fantastic Four.
I'm super excited about that.
I think that's a great combination. I'm curious how they're going to, you know, how they're going to combine them. But you know, the cover it is classic Planet of the Apes. You know, they're not kind of crossing over with the latest, you know, movie series or the Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yeah.
So
it's OG Planet of the Apes. OG, and which is almost as good. You know, the Planet of the Apes Fantastic Four crossover is almost as good as the AI reel I saw earlier this week with Elvis Presley cast in the role of Taylor in the you know, the Charlton Heston character in the original Planet of the Apes, which was amazing. I mean, I know people are complaining about AI slop all the time, but if this is what it takes to get, you know, this sort of quality programming in my socials, I am here for it because I just absolutely loved seeing Elvis Presley in Planet of the Apes. It was great. And breaking into song and the gorillas singing behind him as backup was great.
Like, I don't know why no one's ever thought of this crossover before. Fantastic Four and Planet of the Apes just seems like made in heaven, a marriage in heaven. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Hopefully it lives up to our expectations. Hopefully.
Did they cite a creative team for that, Paul?
They did. It's not admittedly, excuse me, it's not a creative team I'm familiar with. It is written by Josh Trujillo and art by, Andrea DeVito. I am familiar with Andrea DeVito.
So,
I mean, at least the artist I'm familiar with. So hopefully, you know, I mean, we'll check it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. Oh,
absolutely.
But in movie news...
Yeah, the trailer for Supergirl dropped this week.
I'm so excited after seeing this trailer.
This trailer was banging.
Oh my god.
I loved what I saw here. And I hear Paul being very quiet on this score, so of course he's going to be the guy who hates on it.
No, I mean, I will say I it was interesting because I saw online, I'm like, as a reminder, James Gunn neither wrote nor directed Supergirl, which the trailer could have fooled me, is all I'll say. Like, well, no, I'll say more. it literally feels like Guardians. I mean, it just kind of looks like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it's got the music. She's got the headphones. It's based, you know, and I know it's based on the Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow series by Tom King, even though it looks looser than I expected in the trailer. But yeah, I mean, it very much looks like. And again, I know James Gunn didn't write or direct it, but it really just kind of feels like his hands are all over it, and that he's, you know, that they're Guardians of the Galaxying, Supergirl. I mean, I like that they're doing something different.
What is wrong with that? Yeah, Paul.
I've seen it so many. At this point, like every, you know, I'm tired of the Guardians of the Galaxying of every superhero movie that comes out. Which is, you know, again, one of the reasons I didn't like Superman. You know, like I'm a little kind of over it. I think I'm ready for something else. But now I'm saying all that. I think the movie itself does look good. I'm cautious because it does feel a little one trick pony to me from a James Gunn perspective. When James Gunn was announced as the DCU guy, you know, he was like, I just want you to know, like, we're really going to support directors' visions and every film's going to feel like a different movie and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this literally does not.
What I responded to so much about in the trailer is how very direct it is about the contrast between Supergirl and Superman. And, you know, truly, I feel like, you know, why Supergirl has had trouble in the past in film, like, you know, Helen Slater's Supergirl, is that they just tried to make a lady Superman without really giving her any character of her own. And she is just so very different than Superman. She's not the optimist that Superman is. And, you know, that is just very clearly stated in the trailer. I love how, just the differences. And I think that's going to be huge. I can't wait to see this movie.
I mean, that whole line about, you know, Clark sees the best in people, but I see the truth, just blew me away. Yeah. I don't think you can look at the trailer and say this is going to be just more Guardians for starters. The trailer is very Guardian-esque, but that doesn't necessarily mean the movie will be. But also, I did enjoy seeing Lobo for a half second in the back.
For a half second.
Half second.
Jason Momoa had a week. Let me tell you, that dude, he was in this trailer. He was in the trailer for the new Street Fighter movie. You know, he's all over the place all of a sudden.
He's Lobo doing okay since losing that Aquaman gig. So,
yeah. Right? You know. I mean, and Lobo was fighting Wonder Woman in the comic books this week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We'll talk about that here in a few minutes.
That's nicely timed, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. And finally, you know, it hasn't come out yet, but apparently the Avengers Doomsday teaser trailer will be out this week. There's a couple of rumors going on.
Is that what our sources are saying, Paul? That's what our
sources are saying. That's what our sources are saying. The internet. Well, one of the rumors is that it will be attached to Avatar Fire and Ash, which not shocking. Now, remember, Avengers Doomsday is still a full year away, right? Like, I think they delayed it till December. So it does not come out in May. It comes out in December.
December 18th, something like that of next year.
So it will, I think they're done filming, but you know, they're coming out in December. So, I mean, I think it'll be a teaser, a genuine teaser, not like a full on trailer. And apparently, you know, one, it'll be attached to Avatar Fire and Ash and not available online until the following week, you know, not officially available online unless it leaks. And then Disney's like, oh wait, no, let's release a real version, which is apt to happen. But one of the rumors I read yesterday is that there will be different teasers. And that, you know, to encourage people to see Avatar more than once, there will be a new teaser every week for the first 4 weeks of Avatar's theatrical release. Now, that could be BS. We'll find out, you know, I'm sure this week. But regardless, I do think by the end of this coming week, at least if you've seen Avatar in theaters, you'll have seen the first teaser trailer for Avengers Doomsday.
Outside of people who work in a movie theater, who is going to multiple screens of Avatar to see different teaser trailers?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people did that for Phantom Menace.
Really?
Yeah, for Wing Commander. But that was only one, right? That was only one trailer.
Yeah, you know? Like for one. Yeah, no, going to see it once, sure.
I mean, people see Avatar repeatedly. I've only seen both movies once. Now, I quite enjoyed the second one.
I only saw one of those movies once.
I really liked the second one.
But I just don't get the whole Avatar thing.
But people see it repeatedly. Both movies are like billion-dollar movie money makers,
I know. It's crazy, but I just don't get it.
It's a planet out in space that the humanity is exploiting for resources, Aaron. And then the sky.
Humanity wouldn't do that.
Well, you see, you didn't get it, so I was just trying to go through the plot with you. Well, I'm not seeing Avatar Fire and Ash. I'm probably not seeing it once, much less three or four times.
Yeah. I still need to see, Predator Badlands.
Definitely worth watching. I mean, I got to be honest. Like, if that thing's not on Hulu or streaming within the next week, I'd be surprised.
We're talking about Avatar?
No.
Predator Fire and Ash. You know what else you need to see, Aaron?
What's that?
You need to see G.I. Joe Dreadnought War.
Does he?
Because I don't know. I like Dreadnought War.
Let me ask an important question. What's a Dreadnought?
Okay. So the Dreadnought are basically this biker gang run by Zartan. And they have these crazy, there's like Ripper and a guy with a flamethrower called Torch. And they're basically like Mad Max-esque biker gang, but in current day.
Uh-huh.
And they're part of the G.I. Joe universe, the Energon universe. And they're, you know, in previous iterations, they've basically been, subcontractors of Cobra. But, they're very different in the current continuity, at least currently. You know, they're kind of just this other faction that is warring with Cobra because of what Cobra Commander did to so many of them in the Cobra Commander miniseries. So this is kind of like a direct sequel to that.
And he stole their Energon, essentially.
He stole their Energon and
killed a bunch.
Killed a bunch of them. So yeah, we've got the Dreadnought War. So I think we are, it is, you know, kind of the big G.I. Joe event going on right now. We're three issues in. Fourth issue comes out this coming week. They're being released bi-weekly right now.
Yes, that's what I was going to point out, that they're coming out every 2 weeks right now.
Yeah. So, Andrew, it sounds like you're hesitant. You have hesitation on the Dreadnought War.
I like the general plot. I like the, you know, having this third party that's forcing Duke and Cobra Commander to get along. I do like that. But I feel like the art has taken, maybe because of the every 2 week schedule, I feel like the art has taken a couple steps down, especially the backgrounds and the scenes. What are your thoughts about how the art's been in this since the Dreadnought War started?
I got to tell you, I've had a little bit of an issue with the art in G.I. Joe since the beginning. Tom Riley is the artist. He was the artist on the first arc, and he's the artist on this arc. He was also the artist on the Duke miniseries, I think, which is interesting because I really thought the art on the Duke miniseries was well done. But yeah, I mean, I think in the current G.I. Joe series, they've done some artistic things that I don't dig in a G.I. Joe story. And what I like, you know, where like the entire panel will be in red if someone gets punched in the face, like, you know, like right. monochromatic, tones, things like that. And to your point, you know, kind of minimalist on the backgrounds. Maybe it's just to stay on time with the book. But I feel like some of the fill-in artists, or, you know, the artists that they had for like the arc in between and stuff like that, I've actually appreciated their art a bit more. Yeah.
Yes. I agreed.
Yeah. Story-wise, I'm enjoying it. I do really like this story in Dreadnought War, because it basically requires Duke and Cobra Commander to team up to kind of take on the Dreadnoughts, because they're kind of on their own, you know, dealing with this. And so
it's handcuffed together.
Yeah, and they're handcuffed together. I think, you know, what it's very, you know, each issue is a full-size issue, but it kind of feels like a bite-sized issue because, so like, they just move through so fast. Like, you know, they kind of announced this as this big major event, right? This Dreadnought War thing. But it kind of feels, if I'm being honest, it feels a little bit more.
It feels like they're rushing through it.
Yeah, it feels like they're rushing through it, and it feels like it's not that big of a storyline, right? At least in my mind, because it's so focused on two core characters, you know,
yes,
and this
and
one essential one day or two in the desert. So I'm enjoying it very, you know, and I Image Comics and Skybound sent us a preview copy of part four, which I won't spoil, but I think it's probably the best of the bunch. For many reasons. So, I mean, I'm very much looking forward to how it wraps up, because, you know, of course, solicitations kind of spoil a little bit of what's coming up. So I think we're going to get some, I think kind of like my commentary on Stranger Things earlier, I think this one is all about how it ends, like these last few issues, more so than the first few issues. I feel like we're going to get some big stuff in the last two parts of the book.
Well, like I said, I'm enjoying the story. I'm excited. I have not read the preview copy yet, so I'm excited to hear that you are fondly looking at it fondly. But I really wish, I don't remember who did the art on the Scarlet miniseries, but I would love for whoever that is to do the art on the main series, because that is much nicer. I much more vibe with that art style.
Well, and speaking of, you know, this, it kind of occurred to me, because now we're on issue, I think, 17 of G.I. Joe.
Something like that.
15, yes, 15, 16, 17, something like that.
16 is the one coming out, about to come out.
16, okay. 16 of G.I. Joe. We're on issue 27 of Transformers. You know, we're on issue whatever, of Void Rifles. We still don't have Snake Eyes. We still don't have Zartan. And I'm like, you know, we still haven't had Scarlet since the start, you know, the follow-up to the Scarlet and Storm Shadow stuff. I'm like, I'm ready for these things to come back. Like, I know they're building to them. I know they want me to be anticipating, but like, I'm ready. Can we just get an update on what's happening in those storylines? Because it's basically been a year and a half almost since those storylines happened. I'm ready to for something to happen there.
Find more, see more. Or even if they have a second series, right? Even if they put a second, you know, Scarlet.
Yeah, second miniseries,
I would be down for that in a heartbeat. In fact, these, I've gotten, I'm jonesing so much for Snake Eyes. I actually went back and watched both the G.I. Joe movies.
I actually did that.
Rise of Cobra and Retaliation. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually did that recently. And now I will say, I think the second one probably holds up more than the first one.
I enjoy both of them. Like
I enjoy them for their own purposes, right? Like, but they're still not. Neither one is particularly great, but I enjoy.
No, them. They're not high art. They're not high cinema, but they're fun movies. And I watched the first one for nothing else. I'll watch it just to watch Brendan Fraser be the real Flint. Yes. I know they reintroduced this new Flint in Retaliation, but you know, they never refer to Brendan Fraser as Flint, but he's obviously Flint in that training montage. So, yeah, I mean, they're kind of silly movies. They're fun movies. They're popcorn movies. But, you know, watch them every now and then. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything old is new again because we're talking about G.I. Joe and we're talking about Darkness, the Darkness from Top Cow Comics and Image Comics. You know, like we're just kind of revisiting our youths here. Well, the Darkness wasn't that long ago. In fact, I believe like the last... Right? Well, I feel like the last iteration of the Darkness was actually still being published when we were podcasting because it was all part of that, Ron Mars, Stepan Sejic, series with the Angelus and the Witchblade.
Yes.
We loved that. I don't know. I mean, you know, between the Magdalena and all those characters, like really loved what Ron Mars did with that, did with those storylines and how, he kind of brought them to a head. So Top Cow, I think it was about a year ago. Sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, I opened up the preview pages for this, and it just didn't grab me. And I really wanted to, be drawn in, because like you were saying, the Ron Mars, Stepan Sejic era of the Darkness was really my jam. I enjoyed that a lot. And I just didn't feel it. So I'm looking for you to tell me that I'm wrong and that I should jump into the Darkness number one, Paul.
I don't know that I can. So let me just kind of, at least, this is my opinion. So the Darkness number one, I think has art by, is it Ed Benes? Does the art on this first book?
It is Ed Benes, yes. And inks by Saul Regla.
Okay. And, Mark Silvestri writes
it. Three different inkers, but yeah.
Yeah, I struggled a little bit with this book. Now, obviously, a year ago, Top Cow kind of rebooted the Witchblade. And so this is a reboot. This starts very much the Darkness from scratch.
Yes.
And the
very,
one thing
very
that I...
Very new reader friendly.
Yeah, so it's very new reader friendly. Yeah, it's written by Mark Silvestri. Whereas the original Darkness was written by Mark Silvestri and Garth Ennis. This is just Silvestri taking the reins. So the one, what I'll say about this book is... I was they rebooted Witchblade. I didn't quite take to the reboot of it. But the Darkness, this book, if you ever read the Darkness when it came out, which I did, I read the Darkness issue one when it came out, it is almost the exact same story and origin. Yeah. All they've really done is incorporated things that happened later in the continuity, like some of the retcons that occurred, they've incorporated them at the start of the continuity.
Like the Angelus and,
the Angelus
showing up
and
issue
some of that
one.
Stuff. Yeah. So it's very much the exact same story. Jackie Estacado turns 21. He inherits the Darkness when he makes, when he has sex with a woman, blah, 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 blah. Like it is the exact same story. I struggled with it because not only is it the exact same story, the writing and art of it feels
very similar.
Feel plucked out of 2001, 2003, whenever the original one came out also.
Yep. Yep.
So I wish they had done something more modern with it. And or at least taken a modern interpretation of the writing, but this is a book straight up plucked out of the time frame. Like if you had told me this was the original Darkness number one,
yeah,
I would easily believed.
Yeah,
for better or worse, right? Like some people want that. It was the late 90s actually, the original Darkness, but. I for me, it didn't bring enough new to the table for me to really want to invest in it.
I got done with issue one, and I was like, I wonder if there's somewhere I can find the original Darkness collected that I can pick up without paying too much. Because I did enjoy this issue, but really, it just made me want to go back and reread the original series because I won't have to wait however many months, for the story to play out. I could just go buy it now and reread it because I do like the Darkness. This just makes you really nostalgic for the original series.
Well, I know that you're not a Comixology guy, but Image usually has a year-end sale. and you could probably pick up that collected edition.
I'll see if Neon Ichiban might have it available now that I'm aware of.
One, I do think they're carrying the Image and Top Cow properties, so that would be a good.
So I'm gonna check it out there because I do want to go back and reread some of those great stories we were talking about earlier. I'll probably pick up at least another second issue of The Darkness to see if it continues to be kind of a step.
I might. But your point, it just kind of made me want to revisit the Magdalena and the Angelus and Artifacts.
And particularly Magdalena
by Ron Mars.
I haven't thought about Magdalena in forever. I really enjoyed that book.
Yeah.
So maybe just putting this out is their ploy to get people to go back and buy their back catalog. I don't know.
Maybe. You know, it's one of those things that those books, especially when Ron Mars came on, and not to give him, you know, a pat on the back because he is a friend of the podcast and we do appreciate him, but
yes,
he elevated those books to something more than Cheesecake Entertainment.
Agreed.
Yes.
And this is very much just reverting, like a step back to what they started as.
Yeah. Well, and that part of the reason I didn't pick up the issue was that I was not happy when I heard that Mark Silvestri was going to be writing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not impressed by his abilities as a writer. I think he's a phenomenal artist. So it kind of had a stroke against it. And then when I opened up the pages and it just didn't grab me, I'm not saying it was poorly illustrated, it just didn't grab me. I'm glad I sat it out after hearing your review of it.
I feel like those classic, and not to be like get off my lawn, old guy, but like I feel like you could revisit those books that aren't that old. I mean,
well, maybe I do think
12 years old. Years.
I do think that if you're gonna do a reboot, you're staying close to the core concept of the character, but you got to do new stuff. You can't just retread the wheel like that.
Exactly. That's my opinion. Like, if you're going to do something new, do something new. Don't just literally give me the exact same book with the exact same writing style and the exact same art style. Like, bring it to today's. You know, like, this is kind of an antiquated interpretation of the mafia and things like that. You know, you could have really done something a little bit different.
You could have given us a Gen. You could have given us a Gen Z Jackie instead of a
not to be weird about it, but you know, like just give me something a little bit more modern.
Yes, update for the modern age.
Well, you know, speaking of reboots, kind of brings me to I read Absolute Batman number 15 this week. I know I'm the only one who read it, but so this is the book that they've been talking about this book for quite a while. It's it's still written by Scott Snyder. The art on this book is by Jock, who has done a number of books with Scott Snyder. And this is the reason they've been building into this book and talking about this book for a while is that it is the origin or story of Absolute Joker. And kind of who that character is and, in the Absolute universe. And, it is, kind of, again, for better or worse, it is very much a Scott Snyder book. It leans heavily into the horror aspect of this Joker is not the standard Joker. He's not really even human. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. If you literally look at the cover, you'll see, but I actually really, it's a good jumping on point, that so much happened in the last arc, the Bane arc, which I also really enjoyed, but this is kind of like the Bane arc ended at the previous issue. And then you've got this one off in Absolute Batman number 15, because Absolute Batman number 16 will be a crossover with Absolute Wonder Woman. So they kind of just took this issue to explain who the Joker is, what his backstory is, and just to go into light spoilerish material, this Joker is very much like he's basically Bruce Wayne. The Joker is rich. He's got the manor. He's got the butler. He's got the cave under the mansion. He's also maybe a couple of hundred years old because he basically eats children. And kind of thing. He's got some type of demonic aspect to him. So he may actually be a couple hundred years old and he has, he has lived these long lives because he, basically eats humans and children and, kind of that kind of thing.
In his defense, they are delicious.
Very
and,
true.
Especially and barbecue. You can't eat just one.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, it very much goes into, you know, it doesn't confirm it, but it says this is what Alfred, you know, this iteration of Alfred thinks is actually, you know, is telling Bruce Wayne, here's the rumors about who this Joker guy is. And, you know, what he, you know, and here's what I actually think is the truth. And very much Scott Snyder, you know, he loves leaning into this horror thing, this horror aspect. And so it's heavy horror. It's also, I mean, a pretty well done book. I really liked it. I think this is an interesting interpretation of the Joker. And, you know, kind of, I like the way, and we talked about this in the first arc. I like how Scott Snyder has taken these loose bits of Batman, but really done something different with them as part of this absolute universe. It's not literally just like rebooting Batman for modern times. He's actually, you know, done something different with the characters and, you know, kind of given them different origins, but still kind of the same character in core. So, I mean, Absolute Batman number 15, pretty solid book, especially if you like some of Scott Snyder's horror stuff. It's worth picking up.
I don't think I do.
No,
I don't think I like bother. I'm trying to think of his horror stuff that I've enjoyed.
American Vampire?
I've not read it.
Comixology Unlimited. That was good.
What's that?
He did a book with Comixology Unlimited that was in an old folks home kind of thing.
Yes, I did like that. I did like that. Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of with it or in Canary, you know. Uh-huh. So I in fact I would say in spirit, this feels kind of similar to like Canary.
I did like Canary.
He also did Night of the Ghouls. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, Night of the Ghouls was good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the refresh. It's got
that vibe to it.
Right. American Vampire, also good.
You know, I've never read American Vampire.
Same. Never have. It was a Vertigo book, right?
Yeah.
It was a Stephen King, Scott Snyder collaboration. And they came out, those little black, they're not full-size comic books, trades, but they're collected editions that are like maybe a three-quarter size. I picked up one of those.
Like Ash Cans. American
Vampire. No. Yeah, and it was real good. I enjoyed it.
Huh. All right.
Would recommend, if you're looking for a horror book, check out American Vampire.
Well, speaking of, you know, it's been a very Scott Snyder, you know, time from DC Comics, because he's also kind of the showrunner on this DC KO storyline. Him and Joshua Williamson are kind of tag-teaming it a bit, but we, you know, it's been a few weeks since we've podcasted, so we did not talk about the latest goings-on in DC KO. You know, who the final 16 are. Mm. So, you know, issue 2 ends with the reveal of here are the final 16 that are going into essentially, you know, what they're doing, all these one-shots throughout this month.
All fight month.
So we've got Joker, the Demon, Jay Garrick, Superman, Hawkman, Lobo, Zatanna, Green Lantern, Guy Gardner, Lex Luthor, Harley Quinn, Red Hood, Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Captain Atom, Swamp Thing, and Cyborg are the final 16 going into All Fight Month, which is happening right now.
Can I say that I really liked the elimination phase to go from 32 to 16 when they're all fighting over these, you know, epic items from the DCU? I really enjoy that as the way they used to kind of winnow down the field to 16.
I did too. I will say I do struggle a little bit with the book. I struggled with a number of the DC KO books, and I understand it's part of the book, but like I struggle a little bit with how some of the heroes are. I understand the purpose, but like the way in which some of the heroes act, knowing that like their fellow heroes will die, or even, you know, being the reason for their death. And I understand everyone went into this knowing that they were going to have to do this because, you know, in the end they can undo it because they'll have the power. But right. I struggled a little bit, especially with some of the interpretations like Captain Atom.
So here's the thing. Whenever that happens, you know what I just think in my head? I think, oh, they're being corrupted by the Omega Force. And then it's all okay in my head.
There you go. Okay. Well, fair.
Because, you know, they even talk about it. I mean, Superman in that Captain Atom book in round one even is, you know, tells Captain Atom, like, you're the closer we get to the Omega Force, the more corrupting influence it's going to have on you. So why Superman's fairly still unaffected by it, you know, people of lesser morals are starting to succumb to it.
I will say, I totally forgot Captain Atom was Monarch, by the way.
Same. Completely forgot that.
When that happens in that book, I was like, oh, yeah.
And let me just say, I loved the one-shot of the fight between Superman and Captain Atom. I thought that was a great book. I was thoroughly entertained. I was surprised at how much I enjoyed that book.
Me too. I really liked the multi, you know, how they've, it, you know, it's, I'm sure Wayne would just throw himself out a window right now if he was going to hear me say this, but I kind of like the fight game aspect of it, which is that they can kind of choose different skins if they want.
Yes.
So Superman's like, you know what? I'm going to be Steel Superman. I'm going to be, you know, Superman of the 853rd century. And then Monarch or Captain Adam's like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to be Monarch. you know, like I really kind of dig that aspect of it.
Well, I'm going to be all of them. wait, you can't do that.
It is such a video game feel. I was unable to pick up round two, Hawkman versus Aquaman, but in the round three, Lobo versus Wonder Woman, there's even a scene where the fighters are actually like on a TV screen and there's someone sitting there. You can't see who it is, but they have a video game controller in their hand while this is going on the screen. It was a little meta, but it's great. If you're hesitant about picking Wonder Woman Lobo, I really, really enjoyed Wonder Woman Lobo. And you know, it's the same general format, you know, best two out of three wins. But the type of it, not every round was just a straight up, you know, knock them down fight for this one. So I'm digging it. I'm digging it.
The one thing that I will say about this book, these books, is that, like, I kind of thought they were going to be throwaway, but each one of them contains a freaking Booster Gold backup continues the story of what's happening with Booster Gold in the Watchtower. And I'm like, because it was revealed in DC KO number 2 that Booster Gold is actually Darkseid in disguise. And I'm like, ah, damn it. Okay. That's how they get you. That's like putting the freaking Avengers Doomsday teasers on Avatar.
So like the last 2 to 4 pages of each episode have to do with what's going on back at the Watchtower with Doomsday / Booster Gold / the World Forger and all the rest of them.
Being said, I've enjoyed everything I've read for DCKO. Like I'm reading Night Fight right now, which is basically Batman versus other Batman.
Yeah,
because Batman got taken out in the first round, but now he's basically hopping into different multiverses where one of his Robins has taken over the mantle of Batman. So the first one was Dick Grayson. The second one is Jason Todd. But they're not exactly, because to your point, Andrew, they're all infected by the Omega Force interpretations. But I think everything is fun, and you just have to kind of view it from that angle. Like, none of this is Shakespeare.
Right.
They're just kind of having fun with it, and I think that's something that I'm appreciating about DCKO, is that, like, you don't really have to think too hard. Like, they over explained, they over engineered it a bit at the start, but now that we're in it, it's like, okay, they're just kind of whooping each other's asses at this point.
It's very much a more entertaining version of the original Superpowers, right? You know, that Jack Kirby did back in the day. It owns what it is. You know, this is a fun frolic of, you know, putting hero against hero, villain against villain, everybody against everybody. It's ridiculous, but I mean, it's really well done. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
And the art's fun. That's the thing.
Yeah. Like,
none of the books have bad art. I would say so far.
Not so far. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you go.
I was going to say, I was disappointed this week. I was not able to get round two, the Aquaman, Hawkman fight, because apparently, you know, instead of being a standalone issue, this takes part. It's Aquaman number 12 is where this fight happens. Mm. And apparently, according to both my local comic book people, Aquaman has not been selling well. And both the local stores under-ordered, not expecting the large demand, because it was going to be this tie-in to DCKO. So no physical copies in my town.
I will say I'm calling BS on that, because the solicitations told them it was part of DCKO.
I don't know if they knew at that point how big DC KO was gonna, if it was gonna take off or not, right?
But it's pretty shrewd on the part of DC to, instead of doing the one off, doing baking it into the regular Aquaman book just so that the book sells out.
Sales. Yeah. And you know, like, I remember they were surprised by the popularity of Blood Hunt when it first came out too. So when Blood Hunt first rolled out, they weren't buying enough.
I hated Blood Hunt.
So good.
So bad.
There's eight rounds in this first, in this, you know, round of 16. And so there's three or four that are part of regular series. There's Aquaman 12, round four, that Cyborg versus Swamp Thing is in Titans number 30. Round six is Gay Jarek versus Guy Gardner. That's in the Flash 28.
you just said Gay Jarek.
I was asking the same thing.
To be fair, he is actually gay. But, you know, that's
is he? No, that's Jay Garrick. That's he's straight.
Is he? Oh, so I.
Oh, you're right. It's
Alan. Alan. Whatever his name. Yeah, thank you.
It's Jay Garrick.
Yeah. Yeah. But it sounded like you said Gay Jarek.
I'm sorry. I apologize. And then Lex Luthor versus the Demon. I'm excited. I'm rooting for the Demon real hard in Superman number 33.
You know, I think it was the last one, right? Red Hood with the Joker, which
I think that's the one people are really excited for. That's the one they keep teasing too in the back of every issue, is that Red Hood Joker fight.
You know, before we wrap up our conversation, just because you mentioned Blood Hunt a few times.
Yes. Ugh, so good.
You know, the thing that frustrates me most about Blood Hunt is just how quickly the Marvel Universe moved away from it. Fair. You know, you had all those great characters.
I'm sorry. You know? I was talking about Bloodlines, the DC crossover from the 90s. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, that was shit.
Yeah. I was like, why are these guys defending that? But okay, sorry.
No, Blood Hunt from Marvel Comics. You know, they introduced all these great vampiric characters, and then they just kind of throw it away. And I'm like, yeah, they haven't really done anything with it. And in the last issue of One World Under Doom, it's revealed that, like, Doom gave the cure for vampirism to the world during his reign. And it's like, I guess we'll never revisit. Like, why wouldn't we want to revisit that storyline? Like, some of those characters were great. But anyway, that's besides the point. The point is, DCKO, I'm enjoying it. Looking forward to what's coming next there, which actually probably brings us to next week's book, Saren.
Well, yeah, before we preview next week's books, one book that I want to just chat briefly about, it's not on our outline, but I'm really enjoying, is the new iteration of Nova. It's Richard Rider Nova. It's taking place during the same time frame of the Imperial crossover. But it's very much in the tone of, you know, prior to the Guardians of the Galaxy reboot by Abnett and Lanning, very much in that whole Annihilation War sort of mode. It's written by Jed McKay, drawn by Alvaro Lopez. It's fantastic. It's everything I want in a Nova book, everything I want in a Marvel space book. Highly recommend it. The first two issues are out right now. And,
you know, because of its connection to that other book, Imperial? What was it? The Imperial. I didn't pick it up, but maybe I'll give it a shot.
It's standalone. You don't have to be reading Imperial to get what's going on, because I'm not reading Imperial. It's fantastic. I just really, really enjoy it. And it feels like it's kind of picking up where the prior Richard Rider Nova series left off. So anyway, it's really good. Big thumbs up. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, you know, we were just talking about DCKO, so let's talk a little bit about two more books that next week. Round four, Cyborg versus Swamp Thing and Teen Titans, well, just Titans, issue 30. Round five, Harley Quinn versus Zatanna, which is its own one-shot. Also from DC Comics, we get the latest issue of Superman Unlimited, which I believe you're still reading.
I am.
I'll check it out. No, yeah. I won't check it out. from Image Comics, we get G.I. Joe issue 16, which is part four of the Dreadnought War. We also get Exquisite Corpses issue 8, which I'm looking forward to getting on the mics and talking to you guys about.
I'm going to get caught up. I swear.
It's worth it. It's worth it. We'll definitely talk about it. Also, Image Comics rebooted Youngblood. You know, we were talking about reboots earlier with the original creator Rob Liefeld. I feel like I'm going to give that a shot. Issue 2 comes out next week. I'll let you know if it's worth picking it up.
Is it just Rob Liefeld writing, or is it him drawing as well?
Both. I mean,
so
basically the exact thing that I was complaining about with the darkness is the exact thing they're doing with Youngblood.
Yeah.
So lots of ouches and no ankles.
That's yeah, right. Exactly.
Little feet.
And from Marvel Comics, we actually have another crossover that we haven't talked about yet. Alien versus Captain America, written by Frank Thierry. Issue 2 comes out next week. We did not talk about issue 1. In fact, I don't know that we read issue 1. So I'm going to have to catch up that too.
I'm going to buy both, and you and I can talk about it next week, Paul.
It appears to take place during World War II, is what I will say. So that's actually, for me, a selling point.
Yeah, uh-huh. Agreed.
Yeah.
So I'll check that
Perfect.
Out.
Perfect. What a deal. Well, hey, I'm pretty excited about the books coming out next week. Tell us what you're excited about. Are you digging these dreadnoughts, apparently, is a thing? Let us know. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, hey, guys, it was good getting caught up again. And we will do this all over again next week. And oh!
Maybe.
Oh!
Oh! Oh,
oh!
Have you guys checked the calendar lately?
It's December.
It's December, which can only mean the Funny Book Awards are right around the corner.
Yeah, your favorite category, favorite cover of the year is coming
up. That's right. So, you know, let us know. Send us that comment, ideologyofmadness@gmail.com, or comment on our socials. Let us know what you're jazzed about in 2025 so that, we can chat about it on the show. Give us a shout.
Let us know your favorites.
Have a good one, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.